Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We're back from the minds of Gene Steinberg and the tricksterish mind of Chris O'Brien. By the way, Chris's new site, the updated version of OurStrangePlanet.com, debut this week. A few glitches, but we're getting it mostly working. Much better, much faster, loads much faster on your Mac or PC or Linux box. And we're going to be adding a lot more stuff, such as a shopping cart system so you can buy one of Chris's great books. It's all coming in a few days. Meantime, we got the basic thing up there.
Yeah. Hey, that's big. That's huge. I love the new site. One of our listeners volunteered to do the heavy lifting, spent quite a bit of time getting a beautiful new site up, WordPress style, and I'm really looking forward to starting to plug in a lot of material, and the San Luis Valley Camera Project live feed will be the first addition to Our Strange Planet once we get all the bugs worked out.
It's kind of complicated to do it, and the way we're going to do it is through Apple's QuickTime, which works on a Mac, a PC, or a Linux computer, but not so much the mobile computer. We're going to have to figure that out. We'll figure out something, a good scheme that everybody can see it. Meantime, if you're a new listener to the PowerCast, you can get in touch with us. And it's very simple to do that. All you have to do is send us a tweet at the PowerCast or write us news@thepowercast.com, and we will read each and every letter we get. You can also leave messages in our forums at forum.thepowercast.com when we have a guest scheduled. Chris, how's that work?
Well, what we do, Gene, is we put up a question bank thread, which invites listeners to the show to submit questions for our guest. And as soon as we know that we're going to be taping a show with a particular guest, we then put a question thread up there. And that's a chance for our listeners to get their own personal particular questions answered. Since we're not a live show, this is the best way that we've figured out to include, our many listeners in the process. We've got quite a number of questions for today's guest, too, it looks like.
And one reason why we don't use live calls, and we could. We have a way that the network can schedule a time for us to receive live calls. But what that would mean is that, first of all, it would force you listeners to be available at a specific date and time. And we know you live around the world. So somebody from Australia may have to get up early in the morning, whereas somebody in Phoenix will do it in the evening. It really doesn't work. Being able to post the questions in advance, you can edit your questions, make sure they're properly phrased. It makes it easier to express yourself with the time on your hands. And the thing is, of course, sometimes we book a guest at the last minute because of the change of events or a guest cancellation or a change of schedule, and so we have to give you a very restricted amount of time. In the case of our guests, whom we'll announce shortly, we had over a week for you to ask your questions. Now, last week we talked to Bryce Abel and Rich Dolan about their book, AD After Disclosure. And you know that Chris and I have been skeptical about disclosure, but whatever causes the truth about UFOs to be known, what would the impact be on our society? So what's your assessment, Chris?
Well, I thought Bryce and Rich did a really good job opening up the discussion and looking at some of the points that I think most people really don't think about when it comes to the subject of disclosure and the implications of that. I think they did a very good job illustrating the nuances, I guess, for lack of a better word, that are involved in this whole topic. And I did not come out and really voice my opinion about the actual subject of disclosure and how I don't feel that there's a snowball's chance in hell for that to ever happen. The U.S. government's been lying to us for 60 years. Even if they did disclose, how could we believe them? I really wanted to give Bryce and Rich the time and the attention to go ahead and list out the things that they felt were important about this issue. And I thought they represented the whole idea very, very well. And they brought me a little bit back towards the center, not much, but a little. And I do really appreciate the amount of work and thought that went into their book. And we've had a really good response, I think, from the show. And look forward to having them back. It felt like the 2 hours just zipped by. And I really, I think it's worthy of a part two, don't you?
I think so. And I think we will have them back to answer more of your questions. But the point being here is we don't know what the government knows about UFOs, any government. We don't know if they have guilty knowledge. We don't, for example, know if that any of our developments in technology have been reverse engineered from alien technology. And that brought us back to, of course, the story of Philip Corso and the book The Day After Roswell. Very controversial. A lot of people think the book was just a fake. And I guess you can understand why, because there were a lot of errors or inconsistencies in the book. And what this particular episode and the session we had with Richard Owen made me feel is that it may be that Philip Corso's book suffered from the fact that he was getting on in years. Maybe a lot of the information he provided was imprecise. The editing was rushed. Loads of errors creeped in there. The publisher didn't do their due diligence and do proper fact-checking. Whatever, there may still be a story there that we'd be curious to know more about.
Yeah, well, I think the jury's still out on the amount of involvement that Corso's co-author, Bill Burns, you know, where Corso's version of events ended and Burns's version of them started. I do know Open Minds has published the original manuscript that Corso, you know, compiled and then used that as the basis for his corroboration with Burns. I haven't personally gone in and done a real intensive comparison between the two versions, but I do think that their point that there was a looming deadline of the 50th anniversary of Roswell, and you know, they may have cut some corners and cut to the chase a little bit, trying to finish the book in time. But it's
also possible that's why they brought on board Bill Burns, who is someone who is a professional writer and can graft a compelling story. And so where things weren't clear, he just wrote without going into detail of the content. But I think looking at the original manuscript would be helpful, and maybe we'll do that and see if it's worth further exploration. Or maybe it's just the red herring. Something had happened. We had this old man at the end of his years who wanted to make himself look more impressive than he otherwise would have been.
Well, they brought up a very good point that Corso's reputation was sterling, and that he was able to get someone as prestigious as Strom Thurmond to write the foreword to the book. Of course, Thurmond then, once he found out what it was being used for, I think he had that foreword pulled from the subsequent editions. But still,
that's what bothers me. That's what bothers me about this whole case, is the fact that Corso, whatever they thought of him, and maybe they thought of him as being, you know, difficult to deal with, whatever. Forget about the personality quirks. Whatever it is, he is somebody who accumulated some really good credentials. Why would he just throw it all away with a book about flying saucers saying that he was part of this plan to send alien technology into private industry? Who knows? Right. But we are going to look at secrets today, because we're going to look at a book from our old friend Nick Redfern called The Pyramids and the Pentagon. And he always has these long subtitles. So this is one of the longer subtitles we've seen. The Government's Top Secret Pursuit of Mystical Relics, Ancient Astronauts, and Lost civilizations. Yeah.
I like that.
I think it's a good title.
Yeah, and I know Nick's a good guest. He's one of my favorite guests, and this is going to be a fascinating show today, Gene.
It's going to cover a whole lot of ground, you know, because it covers such things as how the secret files in the CIA, what do they reveal about Noah's Ark and the Dead Sea Scrolls? That's starting to sound like Indiana Jones, you know, the original Indiana Jones movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they stick it in a warehouse 13 beneath the government, beneath the Smithsonian or something, and all these things are never to be seen again. What kind of secrets do they have? Army documents about Egyptian pyramids, UFOs at Stonehenge, ancient astronauts. Wow.
Vimana's nuclear war in the ancient past, dancing megalithic sites. This is good stuff.
Lots of stuff there. With Nick Redfern joining Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Summer's here. That means that many of us will be spending more time working from home or while traveling. So getting everyone together for that company meeting may just be an impossible task. but not if you have GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. It lets you host your meetings with clients and colleagues face-to-face all while online, no matter where they are around the world. You know, my listeners can try GoToMeeting with HD Faces free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, use the promo code podcast, then download the free app. One more thing. GoToMeeting is giving away 8 new iPads on Facebook. Just visit Facebook and like the GoToMeeting page. Then you can enter to win your new iPad. And then you can refer a friend. And if they win an iPad, so do you. Check it out. Like GoToMeeting on Facebook, and you could win an iPad.
So you don't want to carry a gun, but you do want to ensure your personal safety. Then empower yourself legally with self-defense products from StunGunMics.com. Stun guns come in more shapes than just what you see on TV. Now you can get a powerful mini stun gun that fits in the palm of your hand, a stun baton, or a cell phone or lipstick stun gun. StunGunMics.com also carries real spy gear, like bug and metal detectors, and discreet car and home security cameras that hide in almost any type of everyday object, from alarm clocks to pens. Now you can see how your babysitter really treats your children. Go to StunGunMics.com, spelled just like it sounds, StunGunMics.com. Buy real spy gear from StunGunMics.com, just like the exact same spy gear sold to the government, military, corporate security, law enforcement, and private detectives. Empower yourself with self-defense products now from StunGunMics.com.
Love gardening but don't love seeing your hard work destroyed by wildlife? Then use the number one most effective deer and rabbit repellent you can buy, PlantSkid. PlantSkid repellent protects gardens, trees, and landscaping by emitting an odor that browsing animals associate with predators. So animals avoid plants before they nibble, not after. PlantSkid is made in the U.S. from non-toxic, 100% organic, environment, and pet-friendly ingredients. Other repellents wash off in the rain, not PlantSkid. It's guaranteed to outlast all other repellents. PlantSkid was the first animal repellent to be OMRI listed organic and now comes in liquid spray, powder concentrate, or easy-to-use granular. Just sprinkle around your garden. For proven protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents, use PlantSkid. Member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Find a dealer near you at PlantSkid.com. That's PlantSkyd.com. Ask about our new vole repellent when you call 800-252-6051. That's 800-252-6051. PlantSkid. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed. Or your money back.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP. As slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
On the Paracast with Gene and Chris, we welcome back an old friend, Nick Redfern, who is also, by the way, one of our guest co-hosts. That means on rare occasion, he's going to take over if Chris is lost somewhere in the mysterious valley. But our friendly, prolific author has a book with a top secret label on top, which means, of course, I can't hold it now, and I have to hide it. No, seriously. It's called The Pyramids and the Pentagon, The Government's Top Secret Pursuit of Mystical Relics, Ancient Astronauts, and Lost Civilizations. So, Nick, welcome back to the PowerCast. The big question here is your quest to find what the government knows and when did they know it. How did you get started on this?
Well, I mean, it's a story that, for me at least, sort of goes back about 10 years ago, when the CIA declassified into the public domain through the Freedom of Information Act, literally only about 7 or 8 pages, but they were intriguing papers on something that became known as the Ararat Anomaly. And the Ararat Anomaly is this sort of weird formation that some people say is the remains of Noah's Ark on Mount Ararat. Other people say it's just like a weird rock formation or whatever, you know, or who knows what it is. But the CIA, there have been rumors for years that they had been sort of looking for Noah's Ark for whatever reason. You know, that's the more intriguing question. And in response to various Freedom of Information requests, they released a few snippets of material. And I kind of found this interesting. Now, there's no smoking gun in there as such. So what I did was to sort of follow up with that and actually ended up getting sort of 50, 60 pages over the course of the next few years, which sort of filled in more and more gaps. And then I began to realize that the official world, if you like, had sort of been delving into a lot of other ancient and sort of archaeological and historical mysteries as well, many sort of related to ancient astronauts, religious issues, ancient civilizations, that sort of thing. So I basically thought, well, you know, a lot of books have been written on the whole, quote, ancient astronauts, ancient aliens angle, but nobody had sort of really touched upon, like at book length, what the government knows about the subject. So I figured, you know, why not try and do that? And, you know, I sort of spent 5 or 6 years collecting material, then sort of spent the last 18 months or so just sort of cranking it out and whatever.
Now, one of the things I noticed here in the highlights I got from the PR agency ahead of actually getting the book, where at the beginning you talk about the CIA's top secret files, again about Noah's Ark, and also about the Dead Sea Scrolls. And as I mentioned to Chris in our previous segment, this started me thinking about Indiana Jones.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, I actually start the book sort of using the Raiders of the Lost Ark story as a parallel because, you know, the final few minutes of Raiders of the Lost Ark shows the U.S. government basically acquiring the Ark of the Covenant, which is the Ark in the film, and taking it away to this sort of Hangar 18-type warehouse where instead of being studied and examined or whatever, it's just put in like a wooden crate, nailed down and loaded up with a bunch of other, you know, things that are also locked in crates, etc. And so, you know, although the movie obviously is fiction, you know, the analogy is there that government agencies have taken an interest in mysterious artifacts of the past. And, you know, if they've acquired some of them, then they've got to be stored somewhere. That was the reason for using that, to sort of show, you know, that old analogy of fact being stranger than fiction.
Now, in the case of Raiders of the Lost Ark, of course, they buried it. As you say, Hangar 18 or Warehouse 13, whatever it's called, they bury the technology. So can we assume here that if the U.S. government, using a fictional film, obviously, acquires some sort of advanced technology or mysterious ancient artifact, they'll simply hide it away out of sight, out of mind, as long as nobody else gets access?
No, I actually don't think that is the case. I think one of the things I point out in the conclusion of the book, you know, or address, is the issue of, well, why on earth would the government be interested in the mysteries of the past? You know, there's no way it's just to further our knowledge of archaeology, history, and, you know, the mysteries of the past. That's not what the government's business is. So there's obviously got to be something else. The one trend that seems to run through everything is that they were looking at the idea that, you know, did the sort of the world of the past, thousands of years ago, have access to technologies that we've either lost, forgotten about, or just plain don't know, you know, that they existed thousands of years ago and they're gone. So it's clear that they were trying to understand sort of weapons of the past and weaponize history, if you like, weaponize ancient archaeology as a tool of warfare for the present and the future. So, no, I don't think that it was a case at all of them just putting this information away and filing it and forgetting about it. It was trying to actively do something. And, you know, the main action of governments is spending money on warfare. And, you know, so it makes sense to imagine that that was the side effect of digging into these areas, was to, you know, as I said, to weaponize it all.
Right, a little R&D action, research and development, try to back-engineer the technology and utilize it for purposes that they can figure out that it could be used for. The Ark of the Covenant would be an obvious example, of course. Raiders of the Lost Ark goes into a fanciful kind of look at the potential for the Ark's power based on what's, you know, written in the Bible. What do you think, Nick? Do you think that just as a blanket sort of way, sort of a general way, Do you think that we did have some sort of ancient technology in the past that was exalted?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly truly do believe that. But what I don't think there was like a civilization or civilizations 30, 40,000 years ago that were exactly like ours, where they had computers, TVs, cars, their equivalent of 747s or whatever, because the entirety of that to be obliterated and us find no evidence of it is just not feasible. And it's also not feasible for the government to be able to shut down every archaeological site around the planet or even stop somebody digging in their backyard and stumbling across something. But the fact is, for the most part, we haven't found sort of telltale signs of a hugely advanced culture. But what I do think is the ancients had access to technologies that, ironically, in some ways, were far more in advance of what we've got today, but in a different way. You know, we're not going to find, I don't think, an old equivalent of a hard drive, or a 1990s floppy disk or something. But all around the world, in ancient cultures, you hear stories about how the ancients had sort of fantastic and almost magical ways, they were described, to move vast stones, multi-ton stones over vast distances, and even into the air. A lot of cultures have these stories about levitating stones. And I actually think there's something to this. I think when you look at a lot of these stories, whether it's England with Stonehenge, South America with the Mayas, the Incas, even Egypt, they talk about, and even Rome and Greece, they talk about the stones being lifted by what was described as magical music or whistling or to the sound of a musical instrument, which all of this is sort of related to the technology of acoustics. Now, the military today is researching this area, the idea of using acoustics and frequencies where you can direct them and actually sort of levitate up small objects within the frequency wave and sort of buffer them back and forth with the sound waves to balance them. And if you look at it from that perspective, I actually think, how they did it, that's a different question, but I think a lot of these answers to the questions about, very baffling questions about, 100 tons, rocks weighing, stones weighing 100 tons, 200 tons, how did they move them? And I think the ancients had access to some sort of levitation technology of whatever means or, mode, that's a different thing, but I think they had something, yeah.
We have Nick Redfern. The book is called The Pyramids and the Pentagon. We're looking at all the things that they may or may not know. You're with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio.
Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
For a long time, you've heard me talk about building your own food supply with eFoods Direct. As a listener, you know why you need to have a supply of the best storable food on the planet. Every day, we document the attempts to take control of our lives. But there's one thing we can all control. Your greatest dependency, food. eFoods Direct products are made with only the best ingredients and none of the trash and contaminants like trans fats, GMOs, or MSG. This food is nutrient dense and tastes great. It's simple to make, portable, and has a shelf life of up to 25 years. Now with eFoods Direct, you'll get the most affordable, best tasting food you can buy. And the new products and pricing will blow you away. Compared to other food sources, including home cooked meals, you can cut your food cost in half. You just can't afford to ignore this. Call 800-409-5633. Or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex for specials. Don't let this offer pass you by. Call 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. More the best for less guaranteed.
In a coming-apart world, you need something to keep it tied together. That something is Atwood Rope, the highest quality rope made in the USA from exotic braids for military, rescue, arborists, shipyards, towline, or boating. Quality rope at affordable prices you and your customers can depend on. Find a dealer or shop online at atwoodrope.net. Enter promo code RADIO to receive 100 feet of 550 paracord free with purchase. Atwood Rope, working to keep the world tied together.
37 things to hoard. Do you have the 37 crucial food items you can't survive without? When disaster hits and mobs go crazy grabbing food off the shelves, your family may be without food or waiting in long food lines. Prepare now at 123survivalplan.com. That's 123survivalplan.com. Many people don't have these 37 food items. Learn what you need to hoard now at 123survivalplan.com. Watch the video over 1 million people have viewed to discover the 37 food items that will sell out first when disaster strikes at 123survivalplan.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
With Gene and Chris, joined by Nick Redfern on the Paracast this week, we have the book, The Pyramids and the Pentagon, and we're looking into possible ancient technologies and maybe what the government knows and when did they know it, perhaps. Now, when you talk about these ancient technologies, let's look at our technology. And something happened, and our civilization went from where it is now to ruin. If we came here 30, 40,000 years later and looked everything up, new civilization develops on Earth, how much would we see of our present civilization then?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think also it does depend on, you know, the level of devastation that destroyed the previous civilization. You know, if a virus wipes us out, you know, the human race, well, everything else remains intact. So, you know, there would be massive evidence of that. If there was a worldwide nuclear war, then, you know, the evidence would be fairly scarce. So, you know, you can look at it from that angle as well. And that's one of the interesting things, you know, with the further we look back, we find also stories like, for example, from ancient India, where a lot of their texts and legends, you know, talk about these battles in the sky using what were known as Vimanas that sound basically like, when you read the translations, like ancient equivalents of Top Gun fighters, you know, doing battle and with nuclear-tipped missiles and destroying cities and provoking radiation poisoning in people who had the old manuscripts talk about troops, soldiers sort of running into the water to cleanse themselves and their fingernails dropping out and all sorts of things like huge explosions and, you know, massive balls of light and fire in the sky and the ground rumbling. And when you read it, it sounds, you know, it's like somebody is describing ancient nuclear warfare, albeit at a restricted sort of localized level in India rather than, you know, a worldwide thing. And that wouldn't surprise me, you know. I'm not sure if I accept the notion of a massive worldwide culture all around the planet that flourished and totally vanished. But I would be far more inclined to accept, and actually do accept, that there probably were localized civilizations that had achieved a great deal of technology that, you know, far in outweighs anything that we, you know, conventional science and history tells us today, and probably did flourish. But, and they are more likely to vanish, you know, if they were just localized rather than, you know, all across the entire world.
Yes, but I wonder about that. If a civilization is that highly advanced, wouldn't they be traveling around the world, as they said, to spread the joy or explore?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you could argue that. But, I mean, then on the other hand, we're looking at that from our perspective. You know, it's kind of like, I mean, you look at any civilization on the planet today, they have different attitudes to different things. I live in America now. Until I was 36, I lived in the UK. We speak the same language, but the countries are vastly different, and the way people go about their lives is vastly different. You know, if we're talking about 40,000 years ago, you know, what would go through the mind of the average person who is brought up in a culture that, for all intents and purposes, you know, could be almost alien to us, you know. Yes, they would be human, but depending on what they believed and, you know, how they lived, you know, who knows what, you know, would have gone through their mind in terms of how they sort of lived their lives. I mean.
So can we look at this as possibly Earth people reaching these pinnacles of civilization only to have something bring it down, or some influence by some outside force or intelligence?
Well, I mean, I don't think it necessarily has to be one or the other. I mean, I don't think anybody doubts that, you know, the human race is sort of fairly self-destructive at the best of times, you know. So an argument could be made that maybe it's just simply the natural course of things, that when, you know, at a certain period, you know, each civilization reaches a critical tipping point where it survives or it doesn't. And because we have no evidence of massive cultures before ours, on a level of ours, that suggests one of two things: either that they didn't exist, which I don't buy, or they destroyed themselves or got destroyed. I mean, look at our planet now. You know, the civilization's getting bigger and bigger. The people are getting bigger and bigger. The health's getting worse. You know, I mean, you see things on the news, like, for example, the age limit has gone up, you know, it's like 80 or something now. What a lot of these shows don't tell you is that, you know, they're now saying that for the first time in American history, you know, the kids who are being born are after the lifespan's going to go down because they're going to be, you know, diabetic and sick by the time they're 15 because they do nothing, they go nowhere, they don't ride the bikes around town anymore, you know, they just sit in the house and eat and play on the computer. So in other words, you know, we have that problem. We have overpopulation. We have resources being used up. You know, this won't go on forever. You know, it's like the guy who drinks a bottle of vodka a day. You could conceivably do it for a month. You keep doing it, something's going to give out in the end, you know. And I think that's the same with our civilization. Anybody who looks at it is, oh, we're the good old human race, it'll all be okay. Well, no, it won't. Something will happen that will be a critical tipping point one way or the other.
Now, one of the things you explore in the book is the government's reasons for being interested in these ancient technologies, lost civilizations, etc. I guess the obvious thing, of course, is to find technology. Is that part of it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would go almost as far as to say that that's the only part of it. There isn't, contrary to what a lot of people might think, you know, there isn't an agency of the U.S. government that sort of goes around just trying to, or any government really, you know, just trying to preserve archaic artifacts or whatever for the sake of it. You know, there are agencies that get funded to do that sort of thing, but in terms of like an official agency of the government that, you know, charges headlong all around the planet just trying to, you know, preserve this and not that, that doesn't happen. So there has to be another motivation. What's interesting is that with regard to this whole theory about places like the pyramids and some of the Mayan and Inca structures being built via what, in simple terms, you know, we would call levitation or anti-gravity, if you like. Back in the 1950s, one author and researcher who was very heavily involved in this and actually came to that conclusion was a man named Morris Jessop. He wrote a number of books, including Case for the UFO and several others.
Morris K. Jessop, yes. Now, it's an interesting story about him because he allegedly committed suicide in a park in Florida.
Allegedly, that's right. Yeah. I mean, this is a weird story because Jessop was a guy who basically had two prime interests, one being UFOs and the other one being the mysteries of the past. And the more he dug into them, he came to perceive them as being joined. You know, there was a combined thing. He spent extensive time in South America, you know, looking around the old ruins. He actually went out there and checked them all out and began writing about how, in this book, The Case for the UFO, that he concluded that ancient man did have access to some sort of levitation technology. Now, what happened was that a guy named Carlos Allende, who claimed to be involved in the Philadelphia experiment, so this goes down sort of other pathways, bought a copy of Jessop's book and filled it with all sorts of weird annotations about levitation and the Philadelphia experiment and sent it anonymously to a scientific division in the U.S. Navy. They wondered what on earth they got their hands on, tracked Jessop down and invited him out to D.C., where they basically grilled him all about the information. Now, a lot of people have said that, you know, the Navy was concerned that Jessup was getting too close to the truth about the Philadelphia experiment because Allende claimed to have been involved in it, this sort of vanishing ship, etc. But when you read, a lot of people don't take the time to read all the annotations in the book. Most of them have nothing to do with the Philadelphia experiment. That's sort of like a red herring that everybody said and everybody's then assumed it. If you read all the annotations, a good 90% of them are focused around ancient technologies, levitation, and old civilizations that flourished and vanished. So we could make the argument that that was the reason for the Navy's interest in Jessup, was this sort of levitating technology, and that would tie in, you know, with weapons, etc.
Well, you see, what bothered me is the so-called Vero edition of the case for the UFO, which has been published. I mean, there are copies available that you can see the annotations. But didn't Carlos Allende or Carl M. Allen, whatever his name was supposed to be, later on confess he was just goofing on us?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, he was... I mean, the Philadelphia experiment's an interesting story because there are a number of strands and threads and different people who said they knew about it. One of them was Allende, who was the guy who got more publicity than anybody else. But it's quite clear that, you know, his story is full of holes. But he wasn't the only one, you know, to talk about this. I mean, other people have come forward on the record as well to say, you know, they either saw film footage or read files, etc.
We'll talk about the Philadelphia experiment, how it relates to the book, The Pyramids and the Pentagon, and what the government may have known or have done, and all these ramifications. We have Nick Redfern with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Yes, we are.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items. And entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast Jumbo Tote Bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. If you go to store.theparacast.com, stop by and take a shopping tour.
Survival is not about the end of the world. It's not about a hypothetical plane crash or the latest violent storm. Survival is about the satisfaction of knowing you can take care of yourself and your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. CampingSurvival.com was started in 1956. No, not the .com part, the survival part. CampingSurvival.com has over 17,000 urban, wilderness, and preparedness items. Supreme customer service. Very low shipping and no games. We look around to make sure we have the lowest prices, and CampingSurvival.com is 100% USMC veteran owned. Don't base your survival on the latest spring up on the internet company. Do business with an authority on survival. CampingSurvival.com. Use coupon code GCN at checkout, and CampingSurvival.com will take 5% off your order. CampingSurvival.com. Confidence born of preparation.
We want to know, how do you use WebEx?
I live in my car, sometimes a rental car. Every day, I find a nice, quiet place to pull over and meet a client through WebEx, face-to-face on my smartphone. This is the way to do business.
The new free version of WebEx Meetings lets you take your office anywhere, your desktop, laptop, or mobile device. Get your free WebEx Meetings basic account now at WebEx.com. WebEx from Cisco, WebEx.com. WebEx.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237. 866-2237.
Now at DeseretFoodStore.com. Sign up for a one-month supply of delicious food for only $99 with free shipping. That's right, only $99. Gourmet restaurant-style meals with a 30-year shelf life. Packaged in heavy-duty Mylar bags for easy transport and freshness. Meals like stroganoff, lasagna, teriyaki, five-bean chili, granola pancakes, and much more. Visit DeseretFoodStore.com. Spelled D-E-S-E-R-E-T FoodStore.com. Or call 801-444-1444. Food for now. Food for life.
37 things to hoard. Do you have the 37 crucial food items you can't survive without? When disaster hits and mobs go crazy grabbing food off the shelves, your family may be without food or waiting in long food lines. Prepare now at 123survivalplan.com. That's 123survivalplan.com. Many people don't have these 37 food items. Learn what you need to hoard now at 123survivalplan.com. Watch the video over 1 million people have viewed to discover the 37 food items that will sell out first when disaster strikes at 123survivalplan.com.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
Nick Redfern wrote a book called The Pyramids and the Pentagon. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm the Paracast. And we got into, I guess, another can of worms here, the Philadelphia Experiment. Now, there have been fictional movies about what happened. As we know, there was an original Philadelphia Experiment and then a sequel.
Yeah, that's right. And, I mean, you know, the stories tells like a fantastic, sensationalized story of time travel and sailors going from the 40s to the 80s and back and forth. And, I mean, you know, it's a cool film. I mean, you know, to what extent any of this is based in reality, that's the big question. And that was something that Maurice Jessup tried to find out. And this guy, Carlos Allende, or Carl Allen, he had several aliases, claimed to have witnessed one of the experiments where supposedly a warship vanished and then sort of reappeared. Now, I think the fact that the Navy took so much interest, I mean, they paid to have Jessup flown into D.C. They paid for his hotel room, his meals the night before, his breakfast, his flight back home, covered all his expenses. That, to me, suggests this wasn't as the Navy claims today. The Navy doesn't dispute that Jessup was flown in and interviewed and that copies of the book were made. 25 copies of his book were run off by this company called the Varro Corporation just outside Dallas. They don't deny that, but their position is that the two guys, the two U.S. Navy scientific guys that interviewed Jessup, did so out of hours and on their own free time. And the Navy's view is that whatever its employees do in their spare time is their business and not the Navy's. But the fact is, it was the Navy who picked up the tab for everything, even the 25 copies to be printed. So that story doesn't really hold water. What I do think is that even if Carlos Allende was a con man, I think he picked up strands of a real event, ran with it, published the information in, sort of wrote all this information in the copy of Jessup's book that he got, sent it to the Navy. Somebody in the Navy said, hang on, you know, this guy, whoever it is, he's got snippets of that thing we did back in 43. Let's find out what's going on. And then they pulled in Jessup to grill him. But the more they grilled him, the more they delved into this issue of levitation than just the vanishing ship. So somewhere I think there was a real truth that was being hidden, and the Navy got tipped off that Jessup may have been in on at least part of the story, and they wanted to know which parts, I think.
Nick, where do you come down on the story that Al Bielek tells about him and his brother, Al, of course, not time-traveling forward, but his brother dead. I think, what was his name, Cameron Duncan or Duncan Cameron or something?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting story, you know, but it's kind of like which came first, the movie which portrays that scene or the guy who claimed it happened to him. I mean, what we have to remember is if you go back and read every book, every report, every story pre-Al Bielek's, they talk about the ship vanishing from view, even sort of being teleported, allegedly, from one place to another and then back again, of the crew being injured, some of them dying, some of them just vanishing completely. But there's actually no talk of the ship going forward to the future and then coming back again. The only person to talk about this initially was Al Bielek after the movie, which portrays the time travel angle, came out. So, you know, it's one of these situations where if you're going to make extraordinary claims like that, then you've got to find some way to back it up.
Yeah.
And we have to answer the question of why is it that in terms of the story of the time travel angle, why was it never told before Al Bielek? That to me is kind of fishy. You know, every other theme is there except for the time travel one.
Now, for some of our first-time listeners who may not be familiar with the complete Philadelphia Experiment story, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, but the Eldridge was supposedly teleported from, I think, Philadelphia Harbor or Harbor near Philadelphia to Norfolk or Virginia or someplace.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, basically, the story, the unofficial story is that the Navy in the Second World War, or all the entire military, was looking at ways to defeat, you know, the Germans, the Japanese, the Italians, the Axis powers, as they became known. And the battle was on, you know, to find the ultimate weapon. And the story is that, you know, at the same time that people like Oppenheimer were trying to develop the atomic bomb, other agencies were looking into other areas. One that supposedly the Navy was looking into was to basically create like an early stealth technology that would make its ships invisible to radar and also magnetically invisible, which would mean that the Germans had these sort of magnetic bombs, which, you know, would have basically attracted themselves to ships. So the magnetic mines, I should say. So, you know, there were different ways of, they were looking at different ways to cloak their ships from detection by the Nazis. And supposedly that in one of these experiments using high frequency technologies and all sorts of weird and wonderful things, the Eldridge was not deliberately, because optical invisibility was supposedly, ironically, never part of the experiment. It was an unforeseen byproduct. But supposedly the ship became optically invisible, but people could still see like the outline in the water, you know, where the water is displaced through the weight of the ship. So it's obviously still there. But then it reportedly, like, really vanished and supposedly sort of flickered on and off over at Norfolk for a second or two, and then reappeared back in the Philadelphia Naval Yard. And no, the reason why pretty much everybody's commented on it who claims to have been there or read about it, so the reason why the whole thing was shut down and, you know, clamped down was not because, you know, the project went black, so to speak, and carried on, but it was simply because everybody got cold feet and didn't really know what they were doing, weren't sure what was, you know, doors they were opening, etc. And because the atomic bomb became the weapon that ended the war, everything was brought to a halt until, you know, back in the 50s or even the 60s when somebody said, hey, you know, let's now go back and take another look. So, you know, I think something happened. But the big problem, of course, is trying to understand. It's like Roswell. When there's no files available from the time on the case, it's trying to difficult to understand where the truth ends and the legends and the rumors and the hoaxes begin. But like Roswell, I think something happened. So.
You also have the alleged involvement of Tesla technology. All this was brought in much later. So you think that there was something to the actual story, but it may not, you know, the details may not dovetail with the legend, so to speak?
Well, yeah, because, you know, the problem is that, like, again, with Roswell, pretty much everybody's dead. Searches for files have turned up nothing. The government, again, like Roswell, does have an explanation. They said it was all to do with, like, magnetic degaussing experiments that could create, like, corona discharges, and that might have led to some of these stories and things like that. So, again, the military doesn't deny something happened. But the problem is, you know, how we take it to that next step. Certainly, a lot of the story can be traced back to Allende, who wasn't credible. You know, he was shown to be a fantasist and, you know, a fraud, basically. But in saying that, when we say he's a fantasist and a fraud, the more we look into it, it seems to be the case that it's from his perspective, but he may well have picked up strands of stories that he heard when he really was. I mean, he was in the Navy, no doubt about that, at the right time. So it may well be the case, as I believe, that he picked up stories and strands of tales and then inserted himself into this story, you know, for his own self-ego or whatever.
So maybe we didn't have an invisibility problem during World War II. Maybe it was, at the very basic sense, an attempt to block radar, stealth technology.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that did not go wrong, but he embellished.
Well, he may well have embellished it, or it's possible that whatever technology was being used inadvertently did result in optical invisibility.
Now, nowadays, our own scientists are experimenting with stuff like that, being able to cloak something.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, research from rudimentary levels where, you know, aircraft were painted sort of almost like mirrors, you know, so they would reflect the sky. You know, that's not invisibility, but optical camouflage and things like that has been researched for years. The British military, for example, have been researching, and this is sort of like really far out stuff, the idea that, like you say, that for example, an aircraft flies over the ocean and it's blue skies above, that the actual coating of the aircraft will change blue. And if the sky turns grey, the coating will turn grey, like a chameleon.
It's kind of an automatic camouflage or some mechanism that is activated manually. It's becoming cloudy, let's push switch number three.
Yeah, and then it literally, you know, it alters the shade of the coating. They've been researching that. Now, that's not invisibility, but it does demonstrate, you know, some of the weird areas that things are being addressed. Now, what everybody who's sort of looked into the Philadelphia experiment agrees on, those that accept, you know, that something strange happened, is that, you know, well, people say, well, why aren't we using this technology today? And the reason being, a lot of people assume that the project was to try and make the ship invisible, and it worked, and they hid the evidence. But if you read all the books, as I said, optical invisibility wasn't the goal.
And I'll tell you what, our goal is to listen to our benefactors for a moment. We have Nick Redfern with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Oh, I was just taking a gulp of Coke. I thought you were going to cut me.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Emergency Essentials has Mountain House deals in June. Going on now, Emergency Essentials, the 24-year leader in emergency preparedness supplies, does it again with up to 25% off Mountain House foods. Don't miss these savings. All Mountain House number 10 cans are 20 to 25% off during the month of June only at BePrepared.com. Mountain House foods have superior taste and a scientifically proven 25-year shelf life because they start with fresh or frozen foods, then cook, prepare, and finally freeze-dry them. All the goodness, flavor, and taste are locked in as if handmade from scratch. Mountain House, the same great meals enjoyed by campers and outdoorsmen the world over. Hurry, now through June 30th. Call 800-999-1863 to experience exceptional customer service and the BePrepared.com low price guarantee. That's 800-999-1863. The choice is clear. Be unprepared or BePrepared.com.